At this time, I want to introduce Dr. Jay Friedman, who's really been a pioneer in the dental public health field and also is a prolific researcher. Dr. Friedman received his dental degree from Columbia University in 1948 and a master's in public health from the University of Michigan. He's published over 60 papers and authored a number of professional books, including The Complete Guide to Dental Health. He's really been an expert in the field of dental therapy, understanding the impacts that it can have in increasing access and providing community-based care, and has been advocating for decades. So it's a great pleasure to introduce Dr. Jay Friedman.
Thank you very much. I don't have any disclosures. Well, actually, I do have one disclosure. A lot of people have referred to me in the past as being sort of a radical. And I'd just like to say I'm really a closet conservative. And, you know, in a world of abundance, there would be no need to establish priorities. But healthcare is not in abundance. And the shortage is particularly acute in dental care for poor and minority children. Both the Alaska and the Minnesota dental therapist models give priority to children, but they are limited to special circumstances and should not be viewed as an alternative to the school-based model. Rather, it is a school-based dental service staffed by dental therapists that has the potential to overcome the social, economic, cultural barriers that deny tens of millions of children adequate oral health care. I was wondering what that slide was. I'd forgotten it. Put simply, with respect to healthcare, children are non-ambulatory. They must have someone with the desire, the time, the money, and the means to take them to healthcare providers. Since many children, particularly poor and minority children, lack that caregiver, they will not receive preventive and curative healthcare, even if it is free. If there is no one to bring these children to dental care, then dental care must be brought to them on school grounds or nearby facilities, preferably staffed by dental therapists. This is not only an imperative of social justice, of helping those who are least able to help themselves, it is common sense if healthy children are the precursor of healthy adults. A century ago, in 1968, Harold Hillenbrand, then executive secretary of the American Dental Association, stated, organized dentistry believes that the most realistic approach to this mountainous oral health problem must center on children. If we can arrange to bring up a generation of children in a state of good oral health, it will be relatively simple to maintain that condition as the child moves through adult life. Well, they say the same thing today, except that organized dentistry opposed then and still opposes the one system that has achieved this stated goal, and that's the school-based dental care provided by dental therapists. Even if there was a miraculous reversal, and organized dentistry allowed the introduction of dental therapists in every state, it would take another half century before there would be enough trained dentists, trained therapists to staff the 98,000 public schools in the United States, which would then have an estimated 47 million children age 5 to 13. But this is not the direction, as dental therapists are slowly gaining acceptance in the lower 48. Instead, the trend is to incorporate dental therapists in private practices and community health centers where the primary barrier to children obtaining care remains in force, and that is, of course, transportation. It guarantees that millions of children will never receive adequate dental care. They will remain innocent victims of social injustice, of social neglect, unless we come to our senses and adopt policies and programs that have a chance to reach all underserved children. It was only yesterday, 1972 to be exact, that's the way it seems as you get older, that the preeminent dean of dental public health, James Dunning, wrote, "Any large-scale incremental care plan for young children, if it is to succeed, must be brought to them in their schools. This concept implies the unsuitability of private dental offices alone for a nationwide program, except for the care of adolescents." And for those of you who are concerned about the neglect of adults, he added, "Treatment of adults in school dental clinics, that is after school hours, points to the desirability of establishing neighborhood dental facilities on school premises to avoid duplication of facilities." That was back in 1972. Ralph Nobini, who in the early 1970s conducted the Forsyth experiment here at the Forsyth Dental Center in Boston, that trained dental hygienists as dental therapists, also concluded that children up to the age of 17 should be given priority to receive care. And he also mentioned that service should be in school clinics. Of course, those who can afford it could pay for care by private practitioners, if the parents preferred. Incidentally, the Forsyth experiment also demonstrated that dental hygienists could be trained as dental therapists in 6 months, as I believe the University of Kentucky also did in the mid-1970s. In 1972, when we were attempting to launch dental therapists in Los Angeles, was that 1972? That was just yesterday. John Ingle cautioned against extending dental therapists to care for adults. He said, do this. "Dental therapists should be licensed to practice only in school clinics. Under no circumstances should they be allowed to practice in private dental offices or group clinics. If they were allowed to practice outside of the schools, I visualize them being sidetracked into solo dental offices and huge clinics, where they would no longer be caring for the children for whom they have been trained to serve, but working rather as second-rate dentists treating the adult population. This has been tried in other countries and inevitably has led to lower standards." Now, the Dental Health Aid Therapist, or the DHAT program in Alaska, I think is a rational variation that is community-based rather than school-based for obvious geographic reasons. Being deployed in relatively small remote Alaskan villages, the dental therapists are readily accessible to the child population, so the transportation... I'm missing a slide here. Thank you. So that transportation within the village is not a barrier. There are areas in the lower 48 where this model is also applicable, and Mary mentioned that. It also makes sense for them to provide palliative and intermediate restorative care to adults, since treatment by dentists is not a viable option for acute conditions in those areas. Likewise, a school-based service could be extended after hours for adults in rural areas in the lower 48, likewise without access to dentists. As Myron Aloukian, I don't know if any of you know Myron Aloukian, but for those of you who don't, what he said, he may not remember, but he did say on the Dental Public Health listserv this year, echoing his mentor, Jim Dunning, "Are there only children in a school-based program, or should adults also be treated because it is a rural area where other dental resources are not available? Is it a community school that the children use during the day and the adult population can use during the evening? If this program is the only resource for dental care in that community, the program should have the flexibility to treat adults if that demand emerges." Now, please don't misunderstand. I'm not advocating adult care for dental therapists, except under these circumstances that Myron would advocate. The DHAT model should not be confused with the Advanced Dental Therapist, or the ADT model, that is being promoted by the American Dental Hygienists Association and that has been adopted in Minnesota and is pending in other states. I call it the ADT misdirection. Hygienists becoming dental therapists do not increase the overall dental workforce. Nonetheless, a dental hygienist should have the same right to become a dental therapist as a dentist has to become a specialist, except for oral surgeons. but to require an RDH, baccalaureate degree, and 2 additional years to become dental therapist when it can easily be done in 1 year or less only adds to its expense. Would it not make more sense for hygienists to advance their competencies to become periodontal therapists, which really is what they already are, and could be more if they were not tied down by the dental profession? To be sure, dental hygienists have a legitimate complaint that there aren't enough jobs in the private sector to fully employ them. But that is an argument for national health insurance that includes dental care for adults as well as children. Now, let's take a little look at the where money is to come from. Consider that total health costs of healthcare administration, which also includes provider costs, and too often when people talk about healthcare administration, they forget the provider costs, that is to bill for payment, may be as high as 31% in the United States compared to 17% in Canada's single-payer system. If 10% of the nearly $3 trillion annual U.S. healthcare expenditure was saved by adopting a universal single-payer health insurance system, approximately $30 billion could be made available to support school health services, staffed by dental therapists and pediatric nurses, as well as providing basic health insurance for the remainder of the uninsured population. Community health centers and private practices that cater to the underserved population are too few and far between to meet the oral health care needs of children. True enough, they increase access to dental care for many poor, needy people, but not for the non-ambulatory population of children who lack a mobile caretaker. And further, as Kaz Evans reported, while there is progress in expanding dental care in community health centers and increasing the oral workforce in those centers, only 3.4 million patients are reached by those centers. But there are 49 million people who live in the 4,230 federally designated shortage areas, and approximately 45 million Americans aged 65 and younger who are without any dental insurance. The simple fact is that there are far more private practices than community health centers, which means that willy-nilly, the majority of the licensed dental therapists will end up in dental practices and private practices out of reach of their intended populations. Despite the best of intentions, I believe that's as predictable as sunrise and sunset. Okay, we can't turn the clock back. Dental therapists are here to stay in the private sector. But as we move forward, we in dental public health should, I think we must, advocate for the classical school-based dental therapist model. How else are we really to expand the dental workforce for children and to make a dent in their enormous need in all aspects of preventive and curative care? How else are we to provide for the 90 to 95% of the school's population at a fraction of the cost of traditional dental care as done successfully in so many other countries? Well, I'm sure by your response that I've convinced you all that the classical school-based dental therapist model is the only one, but let's say it's the best way to go. Let's take a quick look at the comparative cost of training the dentist, dental hygienist, and dental therapist. See if we can look down here. Most of the time, people talk about the cost of the training. They speak about tuition and so forth. At the very end, in the very last column, you'll see I have total costs. That includes the opportunity costs. Too often we leave out the lost earnings that the student experiences by virtue of being in school. So if you look at lost, what they call opportunity costs, the economists would insist on including the opportunity costs, it costs really about $272,000 to train a dentist, and coming down to an RDH with an associate degree, $68,000, and so forth. I won't take the time to go through all of this. But looking at the other column next to it, out-of-pocket costs, which includes length of education, tuition and fees, room and board, the average cost for a dentist is about $442,000. And if we come down to the cost of an RDH with an AA degree is about $56,000. And that would be the same cost if we trained a high school student out of high school in a two-year dental therapist program. Oops, I wanted to go back to... So I think the figures that we really have to look at is the ADD program that is being promoted. It's a very sensitive machine that is being promoted in the in Minnesota. Sarah did mention something about the cost. That really excludes the cost that preceded the training of the dental therapist. So the real cost of training an ADT RDH, if you include the previous training of a dental hygienist, is about $140,000. Now, if we reduce that training to just 1 year post-dental hygienist training, it would be about an additional $28,000. So even if we go ahead and pursue the dental hygienist pattern, it shouldn't be costing more than $28,000. 1 year of additional training is all that a dental hygienist would need. And if we were to go to the two-year program, the DHAT program, I don't know, Mary didn't give a cost of training dental therapists, but in my estimation, it would be about, for the 2 years, including tuition and fees, room and board, about $56,000. So at any rate, I think the cost is just prohibitive to train the to consider training hygienists in a baccalaureate degree. So in terms of out-of-pocket costs, we have nearly 8 dental therapists can be trained for the cost of 1 dentist. 4 dental therapists can be trained in the time it takes to produce 1 dentist. And in terms of salaries, 2 or 3 dental therapists could be employed in place of a single dentist. So, in conclusion, whether care is provided in schools, community health centers, or private practices, the concept of social justice prescribes that priority be given to children because they are least able to care for themselves. And the highest priority is assigned to those who are most disadvantaged. As David Nash put it, our nation's healthcare system, if it is to be just, must be committed to maximally benefiting the worst off. Poor and minority children, the most vulnerable individuals in our nation, and the worst off have the highest prevalence of oral disease, the poorest access to oral health care, and the poorest overall oral health. Justice demands they be maximally benefited in order that they ultimately have equal opportunity to do well. Nowhere can these principles be better applied than in the establishment of health care, including oral health care, for children in schools. That is the precursor of a healthy adult population. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Friedman, and thanks to Mary and Sarah again. And for everyone for attending. Clearly, as we're looking at the latest American Dental Association numbers, 181 million Americans went without a dental visit in 2011. We know 45 million people live in shortage areas, and this is really affecting everyone's health, learning, and the economics of community. So it's exciting to have this debate and learn from the real world experiences from Minnesota and Alaska that dental therapists are providing that routine and preventive care in communities to low-income and vulnerable populations in rural communities and also native communities. So it's exciting to see that from emerging research.